Good morning. Good to see you all. I invite you to just look around at all the people on the screen. You can even wave. Hi! Look! It's my friends! I'm just looking through to see who's here. It's important to find a way to feel connection. Yeah. My talk today is entitled Healthy Boundaries and Healthy Boundarylessness. So, you know, I just noticed a lot of people are experiencing a lot of loneliness. And a lot of people are experiencing a lot of sort of feeling of being impinged upon or overwhelmed by the social context we live in, a very fraught election, a year with such enormous uprisings against racism, so much coming to the surface. So just a lot of people finding themselves sitting at a table where they would celebrate a holiday with a bunch of people, with maybe just themselves or one or two other people. So, you know, this is the context we're in. And so as I was thinking about both loneliness and this feeling of sort of being overwhelmed by outside circumstances, it seemed like talking about boundaries and boundarylessness might be helpful. So one, I'm just coming from the basic idea that we can practice healthy boundaries and healthy boundarylessness. And arguably this is just another way of rephrasing the theme of my last book, which was called Mindfulness and Intimacy, which are, maybe another way to put the same themes I'll be talking about today. Boundaries, simple definition would be knowing the separation between ourselves and others. Pretty simple. Knowing the separation between ourselves and others. And boundarylessness, I would say, is seeing through the separation between all things, including ourselves and others. So as usual, this being a Zen situation, I'll be talking in paradox, which is just sort of normal. To realize that any duality that we form can't be ultimately true. So it makes sense to talk about the extremes of an apparent duality as being in harmony. So one way to think about this is when we have healthy boundaries, we will feel a sense of power, personal power, and we'll be aware that we cannot control things. So healthy boundaries is to know power and not control. The power to act. And healthy boundarylessness is characterized by being aware of interdependence, feeling connection, feeling connected, without codependence. And codependence just means basically having our state of being dependent on other things. How to put this? It's like our well-being is dependent on other things. So codependence is characterized by trying to control or fix other things so you can feel okay. So we can feel connected without being in this situation. So this theme of boundaries and boundarylessness is just a way of rephrasing themes that run throughout Buddhist literature. I know many of you have heard me recite this poem many times, but I just keep coming back to it. The great nun Shingang once wrote, "A single meditation cushion and one is completely protected. Earth may crumble, heaven collapse, but here one is at peace. Sacred titles and worldly fame both fade away in the sitting, and the universe assembles on the tip of a feather. So Shingon is, there are various themes in this poem, but here we can see that she recognizes that we need to form a boundaried space where we can feel safe and whole. And if we do that, we have the capacity to realize that the entire universe is contained within each tiny, ephemeral thing. Boundarylessness. So it's really not, I don't know if this is absolutely true, but I think it's not going to be possible to find a healthy boundarylessness without healthy boundaries. You might be able to get some healthy boundaries without much healthy boundarylessness, but the danger is if we kind of think we can leap into just seeing through all possible divisions into some ultimate absolute whole when we haven't actually figured out how to take care of ourselves. As many of you often hear, we call that spiritual bypass. So we need to find some rest, some place to care for ourselves. James Baldwin once wrote, "He who finds no place to rest cannot long survive the battle." I generally avoid the language of battle, warriors, winning, given my social context, in particular as a white man, it just doesn't seem helpful. But I think Baldwin puts it well. Sometimes it feels like we're in a battle and we need to find a place where we can rest and come back, to a boundaried space. So, speaking of, I'm going to kind of focus on boundaries for a little bit. You know, when I think about boundaries, you know, a lot of people will say, I'm learning how to say no. You know, that's a big deal, is when, you know, people ask you for help or ask you to do things and, you know, yes, 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 yes. So oftentimes when people are talking about forming boundaries, it's learning to say no. And another common thing is in the context of thinking about codependence is having boundaries where instead of trying to control other people so we can feel okay, we learn to put that down. So we realize that it's like, we don't have to put our well-being outside of ourselves. So those are some kind of conventional ways to understand boundaries. From a Buddhist perspective, the early Buddhist teachings in particular really emphasized a very boundaried way of looking at things. So if we think about the Eightfold Path, holistic understanding, holistic intention, holistic speech, holistic action, holistic livelihood, holistic effort, holistic mindfulness, and holistic meditation. There is nothing, the Eightfold Path is like the whole of the way to alleviate suffering. So Buddha's like, the first teaching ends with the Eightfold Path. And the whole point of the Eightfold Path is this is what will work to alleviate suffering or end suffering. There is nothing in the Eightfold Path that has to do with controlling anything outside of yourself. Nothing. And when people hear that, the thing is we're so conditioned to think that doing things means controlling things that it thinks I'm saying you shouldn't do anything. But the whole point is to have a boundaried sense of power, that there is never any moment ever where you don't have the capacity to do something liberative. So what I'm encouraging you to find is a way of thinking about your life where you just keep remembering, I can do something. I can do something that will be beneficial. But as we get caught by frustration and the obsession around controlling other people or external circumstances, to come back and be like, well, what's my place within this? What's my agency? Where do I have power? A famous way This is stated in the Buddhist tradition. It's in the Dhammapada, where it says, do not give your attention to what others do or fail to do. Give your attention to what you do or fail to do. Pretty simple. Now, this doesn't mean we don't like care about what's happening outside of us. And we want to like look and go, oh, here's the situation I'm in. You know, the people in my family are fighting a lot. What should I do? Instead of the people in my family are fighting a lot, I need to read their minds and somehow magically know how to make them do the thing that will make me feel okay. Not that I've ever thought that way. Anyway, so I can keep remembering, I'm in this relationship, but where's my thing that I can do that will really help? So another thing, you know, with boundaries is that I've been conditioned to think, I think it's pretty common, that it's like our actions, it's kind of subtle, but we have this sense that our actions aren't our responsibility and they're someone else's. So I think this is pointed to really well by this quotation I found from the Hadith, which is, quotations of Muhammad that are not in the Quran. So it's a body of literature from Islam that's not the Quran, but still attributed to Muhammad. So he says, do not be a people without a will of your own, saying, if the people treat us well, we will treat well. And if they do wrong, we will do wrong. Instead, accustom yourselves to do good if people do good, and not to do wrong if they do wrong. This might seem like kind of obvious, but one, the point is, do not be a people without a will of your own. So back to this point of power, you have a will. How often have you been like, well, they said this, so I had to say that? Or telling someone they should feel a certain way given a certain circumstance. We don't need to have an obligation to feel or do anything in any circumstance. And whenever we do, we are removing our sense of agency. Whatever feeling arises, with my training, the proper response is to try and meet that feeling with compassionate attention. If it's rage, compassionate attention. Despair, attention. Love, fear, meet with love. Joy, meet with love. So last thing I want to say about boundaries here focusing on the boundary side is boundaries, from my perspective, are not absolute. So a lot of times someone will say, you know, they'll be talking about boundaries and they'll say, I set a boundary. I said, you can't do that. Now, to me, I hope this doesn't offend people, but to me, that's not good boundaries, because then I'm just thinking I can control someone when I can't. Now, if I say, if you do that again, I will leave, or I will ask you to move out, or I will, you know, whatever it is, that's good boundaries. Being clear about what I will do. That's the seat of power. Because the thing is, I can't tell you how many times I've said, you can't do that anymore, and people kept doing it. Anybody who has any interest in meeting the enormous systemic harms that we're involved in, racism, patriarchy, climate change, homophobia, transphobia, if you're sitting around thinking you can't do that, it's so painful and frustrating. And of course, I go there, but I can keep coming back and being like, yep, it's big. How can I do something beneficial? So instead of being overwhelmed by an impinging, intractable problem, I try and see what's here, really see it, and then choose to act. Yes. Boundaries are not absolute. So this is the simple way to think of this is when I have someone who's close to me and they're doing something, they say things that I am very reactive to. I get really mad. Now, it could be all kinds of things. For me, a boundary position is to try and like, oh, I am experiencing all this painful emotion. So one, I want to take care of how I feel. And two, I want to figure out what I should do with this relationship. Should I be like, I'm not going to hang out with them? Should I try and have a conversation with them about it? What is it? What's my choice? And so I try and find a way that honors the reality of my experience and taking care of myself. But the thing is, and this has happened, you know, certainly in my life, someone that I'm close to will say very, very similar things in the same way. I mean, arguably like the same thing, and I'm not reactive at all. And then my choice is different. My choice is different. I don't have to put as much energy into attending to my own emotional reactivity because there's not much there. And then it's like, well, maybe it's instead of leaving, I'll have a conversation with them about why I think this is harmful, because it's not going to be that I will not be overwhelmed. So instead of thinking like the external circumstance dictates how I act, I try and take in as best I can the whole. We can take in the whole of the situation and be like, what's a good choice for me? Okay, so I want to talk about boundarylessness now. That sounds fun. That sounds pretty zen, boundarylessness. The Heart Sutra is that, you know, many of you have chanted it a lot of times. We chant it here 5 times a week in the mornings, and central to the tradition, and it has this famous phrase, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, which is sort of baffling. But in the case of this talk, what I can say is form really refers to the boundary position. There's stuff, there's distinct phenomenon. Within this field of distinct phenomenon, I have a position and I can make a choice. And emptiness is boundarylessness. None of those things are true. I'm not separate from anything. I'm not separate from you. I'm not separate from the universe. My body is not separate from my mind. My mind is not separate from any of the phenomena I appear to be perceiving as external. Wow. All the divisions are just concepts. They're just ways of looking at the world. Even all the stuff I just said isn't ultimately true. It's just a bunch of words. All the language about non-divisions is just a bunch of concepts. Boundaryless. We are invited in this tradition to open up into something really vast where we've put down all the tendencies of mind that make us think things are constantly bumping up against each other and see interdependence. So the Heart Sutra doesn't say form is emptiness, so it doesn't matter. It says form is emptiness. So our boundariedness is completely dependent and interdependent with the absence of all the divisions between ourselves and others and between all other phenomena. So one way, like when physicists talk about things that sound like this, they say things like there's no such thing as objects. There are just relationships. But arguably, you know, the boundarylessness of Mahayana Buddhism is beyond that, because there aren't even relationships, because there aren't things that are even separate enough to be in relationship. But of course, there also are the relationships, but there's another side to things. There's always another way to look at them. So this may seem, at this point, you might be like, this is very esoteric. What are you talking about? In simple terms, what this is like experientially is you can notice when you feel more connected and when you feel less connected. And when you feel more connected to things, you're getting closer to being aware of their boundarylessness, and hence being closer to seeing what reality actually is. The more alienated, apart, separate, the further you are from seeing this. Another simple way to get a sense of this is the degree to which you are focused on controlling an external object is inversely proportionate to how aware of boundarylessness you are. If you use this way of looking at it, you'll start to feel it. You can feel that day where you're just like, God, I just got to get all those people to get it. And you're up in your head and you'll feel the constriction. Maybe I'm wrong, but my experience is when I take the time to investigate my experience, I can see how small things get. And I can see that they can expand into something bigger. So, as I said earlier, when I was talking about like a boundary position is one is where we feel power but not control. So this is where boundaries and boundarylessnesses collapse into each other. We see there aren't actual objects to control, and yet we can make a contribution to the moment. And this boundarylessness, we're conditioned to think that it's like dependent on external circumstances. Like if we get everything right, then I can really open up and be free. And even Shingon suggests, he's like, yeah, give that meditation cushion. I'm about to do half of Rohatsu Sesshin to create a context where this can open up, and I'm really happy about it, and I hope I will see some of you there. I'll be thinking of all of you who I don't see there. We need to make these contexts, but ultimately, boundarylessness is always available because it's actually the nature of how things are. So when I take people into the mountains to do retreats, when we go and do meditation retreats in the mountains, it's very beautiful. And, people have varying experiences, but I would say it's pretty consistent that people after those retreats feel deeply connected to the people they were on retreat with and deeply connected to the environment in which we intentionally immersed ourselves in, where we made so much effort to just pour our whole effort and our whole senses into the totality of the trees and the waters and the sky and the, taking care of the tent stakes, and all that stuff. But, I just have to constantly come back to the fact that if this ends up being about how the mountains are great, it's not really going to help. What we want to be realizing is that our capacity to recognize boundarylessness, deep sense of intimacy and connection, is a capacity that we have, that we can bring by the quality of the way we are, what we give to the world, and what the world is giving to us. So, practically speaking, there are parts of our lives where we feel more connected, more aware of interdependence, more sensitive to boundarylessness, and we can go to those places and use that to develop our capacity, but keep remembering that this is our capacity. We have power. We can offer ourselves to opening this up to more and more fields of our experience. This is why it's so great that we get to do retreats at home instead of in the Zen Center together, because we can start to bring this into our homes. The people in our homes need it, and the way we live day to day needs it. Okay. So, I'm going to sort of talk in a more wave-like between the two themes of healthy boundaries and boundarylessness. So a week or two ago, I was invited to go up north and spend a day with Winona LaDuke and some other spiritual leaders. as part of an effort to protect water. So I don't want to get too far into this, but as some of you may know, there's been a very longstanding multi-year project, huge pipeline project in Minnesota called Line 3. And that pipeline project has been opposed by a lot of people. Principally, I'll talk about Anishinaabe folks who have treaty protected lands where the water's there. They have treaty rights to use the water for wild rice and fishing. And they're like, we don't want a big oil pipeline project here. Not everyone, but lots of people. So there's been extensive opposition, and then extensive opposition by a lot of environmental groups, because huge fossil fuel infrastructure investments during a time when we're seeing one of the largest extinctions of animals on the planet and huge human impacts because of climate change just doesn't make much sense. So these are people who are thinking about the interdependence between the environment, the water, the animals, the plants, the human beings, and the way we act, and making choices to say, pipeline doesn't help. We're going to try and stop it. So it's been years of work to try and stop the pipeline project from going on, and that work is ongoing, and they're starting to build it. So Winona LaDuke had some people up. And Winona LaDuke is an Anishinaabe woman who's been working on this for a long time. And what I want to talk about with this, I kind of wanted to put that in there because I would love to see you involved in supporting the health of our waters. But I also wanted to talk about this because of the quality, something I really noticed about Winona, as, you know, she took us out and just like we walked around on the land. And it was pretty quiet. We said some prayers, but the just being like, we are just coming here to be together in relationship and to feel our relationship to this land was powerful. I've been to all kinds of events with people and they'll talk at you for 4 hours or all kinds of things, but it was like, we're just going to feel and honor our connection to this land. And then, you know, we're sitting around a fire. We had a fire. This whole day was outside, by the way, outside and wearing masks. It was still a hard choice to go, but I went. Anyway, sitting around this fire and, you know, Winona was guiding us to talk about how can we, you know, be on this land in a way that's prayerful and spiritual and protects water and protects our environment. And whenever someone would start to be like sort of grousing about politicians or something, she just wouldn't have it. She used to be like, what are we doing here? How can we do this together? Very clear. Work to create a sense of the boundarylessness between us and the environment. And then this commitment to just being like, what can we do to honor that? So for any of you who are interested, Winona LaDuke is the, I don't know her title, but she's the founder of Honor the Earth. And it's a good organization. I encourage you to check out their website. Okay. So I want to come back formally to just a little Buddhist teaching, and then maybe do a brief meditation. So I just want to talk about a story from the Theragatha, the record of the earliest nuns. So, and I've talked about Padachara quite a bit, so I never run out of the power of Padachara's story. Padachara was a woman who experienced an absolutely staggering and almost incomprehensible amount of trauma. I won't go into it, but the story is long. It's overwhelming. And Padachara, at the end of that long story, we find her. She is living naked with like matted hair in the woods near some village and subsisting on garbage. So a profoundly traumatized person who's just been completely overwhelmed. And this has been going on for quite some time. She's been living this way. And, you know, whenever I tell this story, I just want to keep in mind that there are profoundly traumatized people who are living homeless and eating garbage in our community. And this is not just some weird old story, but a real part of the human condition and part of our community and the people with whom we are boundlessly connected. But anyway, as the story goes, at some point the Buddha was visiting the neighborhood where Padachara lived, and he was walking with a group of monks. And, you know, if you know the, you may not know the literature, these people will walk in total silence. They would go beg for food, then spend some time on the outskirts of town meditating. And if people came to ask them for help or advice, they would spend some time with them. And they were, tended to be, it's not, well, I won't go into it. Anyway, so we're walking down the street, the path, the road, and, the group sees Padachara. And she's standing by the road, a naked woman, matted hair. Now, these monks are trained to not even, to really avoid the company of women, which is not one of the strong suits of the early Buddhist literature. It's basically, they're like, you can't trust yourself with women, which, you know, I think we should learn to deal with our emotional states and trust ourselves with everyone. But anyway, the monks are like, oh my gosh, not only is it a woman, but it's a naked woman, which is, you know, not normative. So they're just like, you can just imagine them all like, oh my God. So pretty kind of striking moment. And the Buddha's response is to walk directly up to Padachara and say, it's time to recover your presence of mind. This is something that I have been really struck by lately, is the enormous and relentless expression of confidence in people's power that the Buddha shows in the Pali Canon. He just keeps meeting people who are overwhelmed and finding some way to say, you have the capacity for liberation, not later, but you can just start now. So in this story, I'd just like to point out that the Buddha ignores all the traditional boundaries. It's not appropriate for some prominent man in India 2,500 years ago to walk up to a naked woman who's living in the woods with matted hair. That's not how people were doing things. And he just says, I'm putting all that down. We're just here. This is the situation. Remember how I said, I was talking earlier about how, like, if I'm really reactive, then I may need to go, I think just go in my own place and not be with you. But if I'm not reactive, I can remain in a challenging relationship in a different way. And you just see, he's like, I'm not doing this based on my rules. Here's how I am. It's okay. I can meet you. So we see both boundaries and boundarylessness at play within this interaction. So then I just want to say one more thing about Padachara, which is she wrote a poem. Well, it's a little piece about Padachara, but she became a great teacher. She practiced at length, became a great teacher and a support to many other women who wrote. There are several poems by other women talking about what a great support she was to them. But Padachara writes this poem, and in the poem, which I'll recite to you in a moment, she talks about feeling like, I would say not very boundaried. She's like, well, I'm not getting what I want. It's, I'm trying so hard. And I can tell you I've been there. I can't tell you how much time I've spent sitting in the Zendo at MZMC for hours being like, why am I still so completely up in my head and all these torrents of emotions? Ah, been there. Been there. Very common. So anyway, Jesus said, why? I'm really practicing. Why is it so hard? And then she segues to just talking about doing her practice. So here's a poem. When they plow their fields, when they sow seeds in the earth, when they care for their wives and children, young Brahmins find riches. I've done everything right. I'm not lazy or proud. I've followed the rule of my teacher. Why haven't I found peace? Bathing my feet, I watch the bathwater spill down the slope. I train my mind the way you train a good horse. I took a lamp and went into my cell, checked the bed, sat down on it, took a needle, pushed the wick down. When the lamp went out, my mind was free. So we see her go from this frustration at the impingement of the outside world and her own internal turmoil. And then we see her turn to just doing simple tasks with her whole being and finding liberation there. So I'm going to invite you to just take a couple minutes for a little brief meditation. You don't have to rearrange yourself in some elaborate way. You might just allow your eyes to close and your body to lengthen. Feeling the heart and the chest open up and forward. I invite you to bring your attention to the physical sensations in the face. And now moving the attention into the interior of the face, in particular, the nasal passages. Feeling subtle sensations of breathing as air moves. In the nose, the sinuses. Or if you have to breathe through your mouth, in the mouth and the throat. Now I invite you to let your awareness of the sensations of breathing extend from the nose all the way down into the belly. And allow awareness of breath to help you be aware of the whole of the body. Including the contact with any surfaces, cloth, the floor, chair, and if you're hearing this, you're aware of sound. See if you can let your awareness still be rooted in the body, but begin to expand your awareness to consciously extend into the field of sound. Allowing this broad awareness to include any emotions or feelings that are present. Still aware of the body and what is heard. What is felt, allowing awareness of any cognition, thoughts. Allowing the eyes to open about halfway. Broad panoramic awareness, including what is seen. And let go of trying to do anything in particular with awareness or with the mind. Resting in natural awareness. All right. Well, I thought I'd just give an opportunity to move from some boundaries to some boundarylessness. And now I'm just going to invite people's voices into the rooms.